I'm going to do my best not to cough the entire time, because ever since we got back, I've been like super sinusy and snotty and coughy and
all. Me too. Stuff. I had a bad cold. I guess it's just from the ongoing traveling. I had a very bad cold. I'm just coming off of it now, so I was kind of a bit coughy too. And I'm drinking a coffee, so I think I'm going to be okay.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah.
I'm also drinking a coffee and coffee.
Cheers, fellas.
Big coffee.
Cheers. Coffee all around.
Welcome
back. We're back. It feels like it's been a really, really long time since we've done this.
It's been about a month since we've done this in our own.
You guys remember YouTube? You guys remember YouTube, right?
Yeah, you don't make videos anymore. Is that correct?
Oh, my God. It feels like it. It feels like it. No, I'm back to it. I posted a video over the... We had the spoon class this weekend, and it went great. It was a smaller class. We usually have as many as 9 people, and this class was 7, and a couple of hangarounds, a couple of guests, and it really added a lot of flavor to the weekend, having a few friends over, and it was great. Really great, great, great weekend. And one thing I never did before was I had the plasma table there now. So the place is starting to shape up to be like just an overall maker space where like we're supposed to make bowls and spoons, because that's what Tracy and Katrina are here to teach us. But oh, is that plasma table? I'm like, oh yeah. You want a knife blank? Cut out a knife blank. Oh, that works great. Oh wow. Oh, you want? Oh, is that stove work? Can we bang some metal? Yeah. Oh yeah. Brett's doing demonstrations. So it was a lot of energy. A lot of like the kind of class broke up a little bit, and some people were doing this, and some people were doing that. And I made a bunch of draw knives for everybody out of old circular saw blades that worked out great. And overall, it was a really great weekend, and it was a lot of fun. That's all I could say about that. A lot of fun. And the people still here. Taylor's putting breakfast out right now. People usually leave kind of halfway through a Monday. Hmm. But it was a great weekend. Really cool. You know, and every time we do these, it just reaffirms the idea that I'm doing the right thing. The only thing, and it just takes up a lot of time, prepping and getting ready and making sure the house is in order and that the workshop's in order. We got to kind of convert the entire workshop to whatever the subject is. And... Hmm. You know, so it just takes a lot of time, and you can't do that and make videos at the same time.
Is there some of that process that you could like, this is just the automator in me. Is there part of that that you could automate or like hand off, you know, get somebody to come in and like prep the entire property for, obviously maybe not the workshop, but like your house and the food and the,
oh yeah. Well, we all
hire that or something.
Well, it's funny because we're going into 2 welding classes in June, and Taylor's going to be here for one, and then the second one, she's not going to be here because she was double booked and she's going to go on a trip. So while she's away, I think we're going to have Jesse, I Jessup, and perhaps Keith Decent handle sort of the food prep and whatever Taylor does. And so we're going to see. It's going to be an experiment. If everything fails, I just give everybody the credit card and go across the street to the Milk Run, which is a truck stop where everybody gets hamburgers. So... That'll be the dad and me. Everybody. Hamburgers for everybody. Let's go across the street.
Vegetarian? Big deal. Hamburgers for everybody.
Yeah. So we'll see how that works. So that'll be kind of part of that, where Taylor doesn't necessarily have to be fully hands-on. And I always hire a teacher, of course, so I'm not 100% hands-on, but I'm here. And I always at least participate as a student. Like I made the spoon, of course. I just published that video. And I'm always around. But, you know, occasionally I need to go run and get a bag of ice or go get more waters or whatever. And also I'm always like making sure the garbage is empty, the room is clear of extension cords and things people can trip on. And, you know, so I'm always just the overall hover, making sure everything's good. But, and also just making sure everybody has a good experience. I individually interact with everybody and make sure that they're having fun and that they're getting wins and there's something that they're not lacking, you know. So it is. It takes a lot of energy, but it's a rewarding energy that I'm really happy that we made the decision to do these classes.
But like so I said, just I'm curious, like you've obviously you taught for many years, and there's a really different atmosphere. Like when you're with a student in a class once a week for a couple hours or twice a week or whatever, than when you are spending a big block of time over several days with some people. And you're not necessarily, like you just said, you're not necessarily teaching now, like right. The content of it, but you're still there and you're making sure everybody has what they need. How different is that between those two types? Or and maybe what do you like more?
I like this a lot more because when I teach in a classroom, everyone's just sitting there staring at me and they're hanging on each word that I say. And then I let them go home and do the physical experience that we're having here. And that's it. I want to make sure everybody's moving, everybody's experimenting with something new, the material, something that they haven't used before. So I'm constantly, oh, thank you, Taylor brought me breakfast. Thank you. Constantly making sure that people are at least experiencing something, getting outside their comfort zone, which is the whole reason for this experience, is to get people to try something new, experiment with a new material or a new process, and leave inspired and more learned. Is that a word? If I say learned, anyway,
sure.
With more experience, just with more experience, and so that's it, and that's fun. In class, people have these, when I do the college class, people have those experiences individually on their own, not with me there. So that's the difference. And this is much more fun. And then Nick, Tech Ed Fireman on Instagram, he showed up with his chainsaw and he slabbed up a bunch of wood. It's funny, day one, because we work with raw wood basically. When Katrina and Tracy showed up, we didn't have any logs because we start with a lot of raw logs, but they also have a lot of dried wood. And I said, oh, we'll just go over to the sawmill and buy $100 worth of trees. And they did that. And then I bumped into my friend Dave. Dave's like, oh, you need logs? We're cutting down a cherry tree today. Dave showed up with a truck full of logs from Cherry Tree, like beautiful logs. He's like, I was just going to burn it. He goes, I'm glad you can use it. Beautiful logs. And then when they came back from the sawmill with $100 bought was like four giant trees. And that'll all be in the vlog. I'll show us unloading the car. And it was just, so we went from having like no wood, a little nervous that we weren't going to find wood, to having more, way more than we could handle. And then Chris Zepp brought up my old planers from my mother's house. I showed him where they were and how to get in the garage because he's going to take some of the stuff in there, use it in his shop. And as a favor to me, he brought up my 20-inch planer, which I have never used in my life, and my 8-inch joiner, which I only used one time on a TV show. They were put there basically without ever anticipating anything that has happened in my life, just saying one day I'll have a shop for them because they were always too big to put in the city basement. And anyway, so they're up here now and we got them working. And last night we milled up a couple of boards and passed them through the planer. Boards that I never would have been able to put through the lunchbox surface planer by DeWalt. It would have immediately just tripped the breaker. But these are huge boards with like chainsaw all inconsistencies in them, and you just jam it through a few times and all of a sudden you got a flat board and about a truckload's worth of shavings. So incredible. So now we have that much more capability. And no, it was a great weekend. It was really good. And you know, I always feel invigorated and excited to try new things. And so I was just videotaping me making the spoon, experimenting with my new big bandsaw. It's the first time I used it. And I realized I had enough footage to make a video. So last night, it was a quickie. So I knocked it out last night and put it up. And yeah, and you could see a little bit of the environment of the class in the background. Arbor Tech came and they showed off a bunch of new products and brought me some stuff to play with. So it was very cool. Arbor Tech makes the turbo plane. So those guys are always good to have around and they get to give everybody a discount code on all their products that were here. So
that's cool. Good.
That's enough of my commercial. Thank you for listening.
You can have some breakfast while we're talking. Eat your breakfast. Go for it. Well, it's hot. David, what have you been doing?
We're working on a little writing desk. It's I don't know if I'll show it in the video, but the desk is actually made to be on our front porch so I can take my laptop out there and enjoy the nice weather. And the bottom part of it is all metal legs, which that part is done. It's we welded half inch stock together and made this base. So and then tomorrow, Tuesday, your past Tuesday, we'll make the top. It'll have basically a box with a drawer in it. And I think it's gonna be nice.
That's cool. How was the process of making the frame, the metal frame? Is that the first kind of structural metal thing you've done?
It is the first structural metal thing I've done, the first metal thing I've done, period, in my shop. And it worked out super great. It was very, very satisfying. I made it and then I just kept staring at it. Like, I can't believe I can make this now. This is something that I can do now.
That's that feeling I always talk about. Like when you make something, you just look back and you go, I can't believe I did that.
I know.
That's what you want to go for every time.
It actually slowed me down because I was just like, I want to just taken this moment. Like, I can now do this here in my shop, which is super cool. And yeah, so it's, and Dan was like, are you satisfied because of the future capabilities, or are you satisfied with what you just did? And I was like, that's a good question. I think I'm just super satisfied with what I just did, and I haven't even had time to think about the future yet, you know? So, yeah, and I did get to see, the gentleman who gave me the plasma cutter, he's a local artist here. I got to go visit him yesterday, and I got to thank him again for giving me this plasma cutter. He's so generous. He's a sculpture artist, and he just had this plasma cutter that he hasn't used in years, and he gave it to me, and I'm just super thankful. And he was like, I'm so glad I found somebody that's going to put it to good use. So, I don't know. It's a very good week. Very good week here.
Awesome. That's cool. So when I was at Maker Central, I guess we haven't really got to talk about Maker Central, right? Because we haven't recorded since then. Well, they had, there was a blacksmithing set up there, and they were doing kind of demos, and you could come in and, you know, they would teach you how to make a nail. And so Jenny and I both made it over there just in time, right before they shut it down, and they taught us how to make a nail. And it was the first time either one of us had ever done any blacksmithing. And I walked away from it going like, that was cool. Like, I'm glad I finally got to try that and everything. But then the other day in the shop, I was in my metalworking area doing something. I don't even remember what I was doing now. And I was trying to cut something down with an angle grinder. And I was like, you know, it would be really cool if I could just heat this up and bang it into shape. And I had that same moment that you're talking about, that like, oh, wait a minute, I know how to do this now. Yeah. I mean, barely, you know, but like, oh, I could, okay, this is cool.
You have
cool.
More, like, you have more technology. You're like the caveman that's got a little bit more technology.
Yeah. But I don't actually have the technology. So I have still have to get a forge and stuff. But just that little tiny glimpse of being able to like mold something with a hammer how you want it, I had that exact same feeling that you're talking about. We're just like, oh, okay. Like this, I can do a new thing now, theoretically.
That's funny.
With some practice.
I need an anvil so I can do some of that in the future. And I saw a long railroad track just sitting on alongside of an unused piece sitting alongside the railroad tracks. I'm like, I want that. I could use that as an anvil, but I have no way to chop off 1 foot of it. So,
yeah,
it's also
I've
very
got a couple
hard.
Of pieces. Yeah,
that metal is much harder. So you'll go through like 7 cutting discs while you sit there.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. I was looking for anvils recently after going to Maker Central. I was like, oh, I'll just see what's around me. Cause like, surely there's somebody's got one sitting in a barn somewhere or something, you know, I can pick up cheap. I mean, you can't pick them up cheap around here. That's for sure. But
nope.
A lot of the ones that are advertised as anvils, you can tell are just modified pieces of railroad track. Where they've already done that, you know, to give it a horn. And, and I've got a couple of pieces here in my shop that were my granddad's, I guess, that were just around. And I could go through the process of making one out of that, but I feel like I would rather just wait till I could find an actual big, heavy anvil, you know?
Just keep an eye on Craigslist, because they always pop up. Just keep an eye on Craigslist, and eventually you'll find one.
Yeah, for you, but like me and Craigslist, just...
No,
you will. Just like look, and like Bridgeports just pop out of the screen, and they're just like, oh, here, have another Bridgeport. I honestly, I've just never had luck with Craigslist. I don't know if... It may just be the region. I don't know, but...
Jimmy, do you have Craigslist alerts set up?
No, I don't, but I go on once in a while. If I had Craigslist alerts set up, I mean, that would be like psychopathic. I'm not that kind of psychopath. I have so many fans and friends that know what I like, and people constantly. And so talk about an anvil. I talked about this on the Fitzhall podcast, but while we were in Cleveland, I got a message from my buddy Mike, who always finds cool stuff, and he knows what I like. He's a friend and former fan, but now a close friend. And Mike sends me a message while I'm in Cleveland. Hey, you like this anvil? I said, yeah. How much? $1,000. It says it's 450 pounds. I'm like, I want a giant anvil. I want a big anvil. Anyway, fast forward, and you might have heard me talk about this. The anvil shows up here, and it's 700 pounds. He goes, well, that's never going to happen again. Because it wasn't his. He was just out of sale. And he said, he has a big truck. He's like, I'll lay out the money, and you pay me back. So the farmer who had it said it was 560 pounds. And he put it on the truck. And after the Cleveland weekend, he came over and we took it off. I'm like, this is huge. And my friend had a deer scale to like weigh dead deer. And we put it on the scale and it went up to over 700 pounds. And he's like, well, that's never going to happen again where somebody tells you it's that's one crazy. Thing and it's more. So I paid $1,000 for it and it's probably worth several thousand. I mean, it could be worth as much as, I don't know, $5,000, $7,000. We don't know yet exactly because we still don't know the brand. So for the first time in a while, I scored pretty big, but I'm not getting rid of it. You know, I think like, oh, $1,000 anvil, that'll look cool in a video. You know, that'll give me some Wile E. Coyote shots to take. And so that's why I'm like,
please,
yeah,
please do that.
You know, it's funny.
Gotta drop like, that anvil from somewhere.
You guys can attest to this. It's like, we basically, each one of us run our own TV show. And then when you're in a real TV show and every episode costs $500,000 to make, we make our own TV show every couple of weeks or every week. And it doesn't really cost anything, you know, comparatively speaking. So when I think of like, oh, $1,000 for a giant cool looking anvil, take it. For me, that's just a couple of shots. And I've talked about that a lot. I mean, that's how I justify buying too much junk. But this is the one I scored with. But There are, if you guys both want anvils, you know, between Mount Phillips Metalworks and Andrew in Dallas, you guys, he'll certainly set you up. Just say how much you want to spend, and he'll get you an anvil and he'll mail it to you.
Okay, so mail it to me.
He will
fit in my mailbox. So I have a question about anvils because I know nothing about them. I know there's a bunch of different weights, there's a few different shapes and stuff, but the weight, I think, is the big thing. Obviously, the heavier the better, the less it's going to move. But what's a low bar to entry weight? Like, are we talking 100 pounds or 400 pounds or 50 pounds? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what's the kind of base?
Like Chris Cash gave me a little Hey Button anvil, which is very sort of. He was very generous because I let him come and hang out at a couple of the classes. So as a gift, he gave it to me. It's a great little anvil, probably weighs about 60, 70 pounds. And it's awesome. I mean, because of the brand and the style, it's worth a lot of money. I mean, I don't know. Chris, I'm sorry. I think that, I mean, don't get mad at me if I say the wrong thing, but it might be worth about $500 or $600, that size anvil. Typically speaking, you pay anywhere between like $3 to $4 for pound. That's kind of the average going price. Mm-hmm. If it's a really sought after anvil, you pay more. So like maybe $5 or $6 per pound. And, you know, if you get lucky, it's just take it. Yeah. It's one of those things. Like there was an anvil on Craigslist here and I didn't go on this listing quick enough. And I'm kind of like lackadaisical these days because I have too much stuff. I kind of lost that fire where it's like, I got to get there at 6 a.m. But Brett still has it. And Brett ended up getting the anvil that I saw. He showed up with it. He's like, look what I got in Greenville, which is a mile away. I'm like, oh, I saw that. I didn't call fast enough. Anyway, he got the guy, Brett was making a deal with the guy for the anvil for only just a few $100. It's a huge anvil. I think he actually ended up reselling it. And the guy's wife comes out. She goes, get that out of here. Just you could take it. I don't even want it. So Brett said the guy's wife like blew his whole mojo of trying to like negotiate a deal. But he got it for like, I think, a few $100s. So, you know, an anvil that's probably worth $1,000.
The problem is... It's a gateway. So you get the anvil. And in my situation, okay, I'm going to need a kiln. And I'm not going to build one, so I'm going to buy one. Then I'm going to need, I don't know what they're called, all the different tong things. And it just leads to all the other things that I need to use the anvil.
Then you got to make your garage bigger, like me.
Yeah, I was talking about wanting a forge. And Jenny wants a kiln because she's starting to do a lot more pottery now. And then she also wanted a pizza oven. So I'm like, all right, can we make a combo forge, kiln, pizza oven? I mean, I'm sure you can. I don't know that you should, but that's one of the things we're thinking about.
Bob.
But yeah, I'm definitely interested in.
You just reminded me. Remind me to talk to you later. I could probably pull you in on this thing I'm doing with First Build in Kentucky. I might be going to Kentucky in July with First Build, and we're going to build a pizza oven at their fab shop.
Ooh.
I might be able to pull you in. We'll do like two videos, two pizza ovens. That might work.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, they build them there in the shop, right? They produce the smokeless, like, really nice.
The smokeless pizza ovens, and then you install them wherever you want. So you could, it's like a rebreather with smoke. So you could put it in an apartment, for instance, and have like pizza quality pizza made inside, and it doesn't create smoke somehow.
Wow.
It's an invention they came up with. So they want me to go through the fab tech of building one of those in their shop. So
sweet.
I'll talk to the people there. And since you live there, it'd be easy to get you in.
Yeah, that's awesome. Speaking of, maybe for anybody that's local to me, they've announced the Louisville Maker Fair again this year, which last year Jimmy was there. He was at this first build thing doing something, and it happened to be the same day as the Maker Fair. This year, and the Maker Fair was not great last
year.
Wasn't
huge. Wasn't huge. Just a few people.
But this year, they're apparently, like, they've got the mayor involved, and they're trying to boost it. So the city is actually putting some effort into promoting it. It's 2 days instead of 1 day. That, to me, at least says that they're trying to, you know, increase its thing. So if you're local around the Louisville area, I think it's September. I'm not exactly sure the date. It's in the fall sometime. But I'm going to try my best to help promote it and get people there because, you know, it's like the closest one to me. And I mean, I guess we haven't really talked about this, but Maker Faire Bay Area has kind of a questionable future. And that lit a little bit of a fire in me about trying to continue to support and maybe support the local ones a little bit more. If the big flagships are starting to have trouble, then that means it's going to filter down. So
yeah.
Anyway, all that to say, I'm going to try to help promote and be a part of the Louisville one this year, if possible, to help it survive and help it become. Last year was disappointing. Not to anybody's fault. It was just a small turnout. So I want to try my best.
It was a quick walkthrough.
Bigger. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But that's in the fall. So if anybody else is around, you know, go ahead and plan for that. And so Maker Faire, let's talk about Maker Faire. Since I brought it up, there's been some, like, there was an article that went around before Bay Area about how this might be the last one. This past one might be the last one because they don't have corporate sponsorship enough. Apparently, the attendance has kind of gone up every year, but the attendance, the ticket cost is not what really pays for the fair because it's so expensive out there. And they still haven't announced anything. You know, they've said like they don't really know what the future holds and everything. But I don't know. That kind of changed the way I walked through the fair and interacted with stuff this year. It was also really rainy, and that, I think, cut down some of the, you know, people showing up, and it moved everything, not everything, but a lot of things inside. It changed the atmosphere. But I think knowing that that might be the last one, or the, you know, or that it's in a bad enough position to where that's a discussion, it bummed me out.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
It's you know? It's a bummer.
So hopefully that's not the case.
I thought there was a really good turnout.
I'm not tearing up, by the way. I'm just
even with the weather, there seemed to be a really good turnout. And even though there were a few minutes of like pouring rain, I think people came prepared when it was just kind of sprinkling and drizzling outside. People had umbrellas, and some people didn't care, and they were still out wandering. And then there's lots of tents and buildings, and there's always stuff to do. And it felt good to me. It felt like, yeah, this is,
yeah.
It felt successful.
I was very impressed that so many people were standing outside in the pouring rain, still interacting and not getting scared away to run inside. There was still hundreds and hundreds of people outside in the pouring rain, walking around with raincoats or umbrellas on, still, you know, checking out the food and checking out the outdoor displays. So yeah. That was cool. It didn't dampen.
We went to the, yeah, definitely. And we made an effort to go the little, bazaar, I guess is what they call it, like all the handmade stuff that people are selling. It's all outside in this one little area. It's kind of off the beaten path as far as like the rest of the, you know, there's like a huge building of robotics and 3D printers and CNCs and that type of stuff. And then there's this little outdoor, little tent community of people who are making and selling artwork and like beautiful little things. And they were outside, and since it was raining, people weren't going to see them. It was such a bummer, like looking out there, and they're, you know, people were, they were trying to move their tents around so they weren't standing in like 3 inches of water. And so we made a special effort to go in the rain, spend some time out there, walk through and like look at things. We bought some jewelry and bought some little planners for our kids for plants and t-shirts and stuff like that. But I think, you know, like the tech companies and like the 3D printing companies, and they're going to be fine if the Maker Faire idea starts to go away. Like, you know, they'll find different ways to market because they have marketing departments. But these little couples or single person deals that are making, you know, like this one guy was making wooden phone cases and they're beautiful. They're, I don't know if he was doing them like digitally or what, but this whole thing of like these beautiful wooden cases and skateboards. And like that guy probably spends all his time doing that and he's not going to market, right? So he goes to craft shows and he goes to Maker Faire and he hopes that he sells enough to continue to do the thing that he really enjoys. And so like if Maker Faire, like one of the big ones, goes away, that's going to filter down in a lot of different ways. And I think that's what bums me out more than, oh no, I can't see what new 3D printer is out this year. You know what I mean? So I really hope that they can figure out a way. I was really hoping, honestly, since that article came out like the week before, I was really hoping that some big company, some, you know, DIY, like home improvement type company or somebody would come forward and be like, we're going to save Maker Faire. Yeah. And, you know, step in as like next year, we're going to headline and maybe that'll still happen. But I think it would have given a boost to people. Somebody.
It's a good opportunity for someone to step in.
It really is. And yeah. I hope somebody does.
What I'd like to see more of, like in some of the new fairs are doing it. I mean, I know Workbench Con is working behind the scenes to get more interactive. And obviously Spring Make was very interactive. See more interactive, see more disciplinary intermixing. Like I want to, like, that's why I, when somebody said, what was your favorite booth at the show? I said the Avid CNC guys, because their show start to finish what you could do with this machine. You could make they had a very complicated design, but that doesn't necessarily mean anybody can't achieve that. But it was a very complicated design made by some experienced designers, but they had this crossbow and all the parts were made on their machine. So they had a very good demonstration showing how the plasma cutter interacts with the CNC, interacts with, you know, they could have incorporated a 3D printing thing. But I would like to see more of that where you have somebody blacksmith something, then it gets a 3D printed part, then it gets a CNC part. And that's a little complicated of an ask because everyone needs to combine forces and figure out what that thing is. But wouldn't it be great, like, if everybody at the show had to make one part of something. So at the booth, all the laser guys all day long are cutting this lasery thing. And then at the 3D printer booth, these guys are all 3D printing this thing all day long on some of the machines instead of making trinkets and 16-sided dice. You know, and by the end of the show, there's an assembly line and they're putting all these parts together to make a widget. Even if it's a completely useless product, but it's got everybody's signature part that interlocks somehow on that object. You know, even
it's a really good idea.
Even if everybody was making like a puzzle piece, and by the end, all those puzzle pieces came together to spell, you know, Maker Faire, Bay Area, or whatever it was. So instead of everyone just making a widget of nonsense, they make a widget of a bigger piece of the puzzle, and that bigger the piece of the puzzle becomes some thematic object that's designed. I know that's super complicated, and I'm sorry I put that out there. Everybody.
That's a great idea. No, I mean, yeah, the logistics would be huge, but I mean, that is a great way. It's a great way to get somebody to walk through the entire fair and be a part of all the different things because they have to see, like, I need 10 parts, right? And so I have to go to at least 10 places to get those parts. And maybe all the 3D printing companies are making the same part and you get the one that you like the most or something.
Right, or the color.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
Thank you.
Jimmy just saved Maker Faire.
We should talk about the people who work for Make and the people who worked at Maker Faire because we know a lot of them personally. And
yeah.
They are very dedicated to what they do. They're many of them are extremely skilled and makers themselves and do things for Make and then do things on their own.
It is a lifestyle. It is a lifestyle working for Make Magazine. And those guys are dedicated. Those guys and girls are dedicated to that brand. And yeah, everybody comes away from Maker Faire with like a feel good, like, wow, you know, we're definitely changing something. We're moving the needle as... And then those people, those folks you're talking about, like Caleb and Mike and Sabrina and that crew that we all know and you know everybody else really works hard to make that happen.
Yeah. It's a huge undertaking too.
I can't even imagine that weekend, the weeks leading up to that. It just sounds insane.
You know, it's wild because you're totally right. Like those people, and there's a bunch of other people too, but like the people that we know that are a part of it, they love it and they are there doing the work. And I've never heard any of them over the years complain about what they're doing or like, oh, I have to do this thing again. Like I was walking around and I saw Caleb And he just stops and asks, like, how's it going? Everything good? You need anything? Whatever. And I'm like, well, we got to try to figure out how to record the podcast on the stage. And he was like, I'll go right now and find out. I'll let him know that you're going to come ask him. And it was like, he has other stuff to do.
Right.
And he was, you know, on the opposite side of the fair, but he came and asked what I needed and then went to take care of it. And he's not the only one. Like, they all do that. It's amazing.
Caleb came up with a great idea for me. And if you listen, Caleb, thank you a million times. I want to hug you again and again. Caleb came up with a great idea for me. I love when people think of me and come up with ideas for me that I otherwise wouldn't even have, like, thought of. He said, let's get you on stage for an hour and you just, like, take suggestions from the audience and you brainstorm them on a whiteboard. And that's exactly what we did. And I had so much fun. And I videotaped it, most of it. I meant to say videotaped most of it. Videotaped it is not a word. So
you also didn't use tape, but it's cool. Right. Go ahead.
I digitally captured the experience. But it was great, and we had a lot of laughs, and Caleb was a perfect host, and Caleb, I want to do that every day of my life. That was fun. We just basically, we did, like, what do you call that when you go on stage? Comedy improvisation. So it's like, somebody name a thing and a person, and then I come up with an idea. But we were just coming up with, like, home improvement ideas. It was just a quick thing he thought of, and I had a lot of fun doing that. And I always say that I love being challenged in MacGyver style. Like, okay, we have to get out of here before the bomb explodes, or we have to develop or make something that's using only this material, or if you only have an hour and you need to do this. I love those challenges because that's when you get super creative and you really start to go to those parts of your brain and your skill set you otherwise wouldn't tap into. You take the lazily least path of resistance because that's what we always do. But then when all of a sudden that isn't working, you have to really figure it out. And that was what there was a certain level of pressure on stage for me to do that. And it was a lot of fun, a lot of laughs too. So that was good. Thank you. I completely forgot we did that.
Yeah. So what did you, I mean, with that, what did you walk away, both of you walk away from Maker Faire with? Like, when I leave every year, I have a renewed interest in something, or like, or I'm really grateful for this. And I mean, it's usually a combination of things, but did you walk away with, like, a new motivation for something?
Two things. I want to get a steam engine. So I want to get a steam engine.
Like, a locomotive?
I want to get a 60,000-pound case locomotive made in 1888. That's what I want. No, I want to get a small steam engine. And I know I can probably get one from Andrew because he's got everything in the world. But I want to get my hands on a small steam engine. I want to start wearing overalls and carrying an oiler can around, like those, because I'm getting to that age where I'm going to be the kooky old guy at the fair that runs the steam engine and doesn't talk to anybody and chew on my tongue. I want to be that guy. I want to be the steam engine guy that just carries an oiler. And I also want to mod a car. So I just, because being in the Bay Area reminds me of going to Burning Man. I was at Burning Man 20 years ago, and that's unbelievable for me to say that because it still seems like last week. 20 years ago in 1999, I went to my first and only Burning Man. And I had a very, very great experience, and it's always stuck with me. And then it kind of went away for a minute, but then when I got back into Maker Faire, that whole experience came back because it's all very similar people and it's very interconnected in a way, especially the Bay Area Maker Faire. But you see those crazy cars, the car that Adam Savage stood in, those crazy cars, and seeing all those hydraulics, and then that big giant walking crab cage, whatever that thing was, that stuff sticks with me. Can we talk about that for a minute? I know we talked about it privately, that giant walking crab cage that these guys are spending so much time and energy on.
Yeah.
There's guys there that are like going down the path of making this giant walking robot, which is unbelievable. But I want it, like, for the amount of time and energy they put into it, and I they're going to call me and say, oh, you're nothing. You don't know how to do hydraulics. But I would expected more from that big giant walking crab cage, David.
So Dan and I were so it's this guy in a robot suit. So the guy's, you know, 6 foot tall, but the robot suit is like 25 foot tall. And his, so the robot, I don't know how to explain
it. It looks like a lobster cage with hydraulics.
Yeah. So he's in this robot suit and Dan and I were watching it. And we're like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. And then Dan goes, I don't want to be a jerk, but is that all it does? And he walked 20 feet and it took him 5 minutes to walk 20 feet. And we're like, yeah, you could walk 20 feet not in a robot suit. It was cool. Dan was obviously joking, but it was
I thought that thing was going to like trot across. I expected it to go tick, 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 and then like make a quick turn on one ball of its foot and go tick, 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 to the other side of the, it was in a big giant fenced off area.
It's like Men in Black, the little alien inside the bigger alien. Do you know what I'm talking about? Do you remember that scene in the first one?
Yeah.
It was like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, honestly, I know you guys are kidding around, but like think about what that is in relation to what will be made in 20 years, 50 years, right? Like that's a first step. That's scaling up human movement. And I think part of the reason that it kind of breaks down and doesn't look like you would expect it to look is because you're taking a person with human shape and human movement and you're translating that to like this big roll cage with like 4 feet.
Lobster
like it's
cage.
Not one-to-one, right? You know what I mean?
Lobster
cage, sure. It looks like a roll cage from a truck that just like fell down a hill. But
you know what it looks like too? It looks kind of like if a human being or like a, let's say gorilla, because a gorilla is usually in that position full time, is hunched over, like if your breasts were kind of net your knees. And so your right and left arm are right in parallel with your right and left foot. So if you're like crouched down, like in a football stance kind of, and like that's how you walk. You walk on your hands and your feet at the same time. That's what this thing did. And then if the human being's inside of it, he's inside like the bent back hump on your back, and that's where he controls it from. So that's, for the people that will never see a picture of this thing, that's what we're describing. So they basically took a humanoid figure and kind of bent it over onto itself. So the two middle legs will go forward, and then the two outer legs might come forward of that or independently. And then each human movement inside the robot suit makes those movements on the four robot legs. And then you look like you have a giant walking lobster cage.
What was the name of it? Because I'm going to put a link to it so people can see what we're talking about.
Lobster bot. Lobster cage bot.
That's not what it was called.
I know Megatron. Forby has a video of it on his Instagram.
Okay. Well, you guys can go look at Forby's Instagram then and see it. I don't know. All right. So what else? What did you take away from Maker Faire?
For me, I never really dug into any one of the booths or what was going on. I just kind of did an overview. And my biggest thing is hanging out with people, other creators, and people who watch and listen to us. That's the main reason that I go. And I took a... So just talking to other creators gives me ideas. Ben from Homemade Modern had lots of good thoughts. And I walked away from that thinking, oh, yeah, I need to do some of this. And it really kind of got my brain going and making me rethink projects a little bit more.
Every time I hang out with Ben, I walk away going, I should just quit.
But he's really, really smart. He's really good with
Ben's
ideas.
Like, you know what you should be doing? You should be doing this and that. And I'm like, oh... All right, I'm just going to quit. No, Ben's just so smart and inspiring. And he says like two or three things while you're hanging out. Like, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God. You know, he has that power to just change the dynamic with just a couple of sentences.
Yeah.
He's amazing dude.
I mean,
he's just really awesome at sharing information too. Like he's open about, he has tons of ideas and has tested a lot of things, and he's totally open to sharing his experience with people to get them headed in the right direction, and he did that for me when I was like kind of first starting out. We had a phone call and it was kind of out of the blue, and he just dumped tons of knowledge, sharing all sorts of stuff. And it was really, really cool. Thanks, Ben. Cool.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ben.
I really think the doing a project a week for the rest of my life sounds terrible. Like
do a project a month. It works.
I'm not as big as you, so I have to keep putting out videos to pay the bills.
Unfortunately,
there's a breaking point. It's really hard to create something every single week and then hit the reset button and start over every single week. I think eventually I'm going to reach a breaking point. So it's got to evolve into something else. It's got to turn into something else. And maybe that's not for years, but I can't do this every single week. It feels like it really just sucks the energy out of me.
Yeah, well, that's kind of why I've been taking a little bit of a break, honestly. I mean, I'm just kind of regrouping. I have some really good ideas in the works. And like I said, I want to modify a car. Tomorrow I might go look at a car that I'm going to purchase for this next project I want to do. And yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting to just kind of take a step back and but you feel responsible for your audience, and you want to make sure that they know that you're not quitting or that you're actually coming back.
We're not quitting. And I want to make it extremely clear that I'm very, very grateful for the position that I'm in. And I know this is a rare thing that I get to do. I get to make whatever I want, and lots of people want to be in this position. And I appreciate all where I'm at. For sure. I just know that I need to, for me to keep doing this, I have to be satisfied. I have to enjoy doing it. And I think eventually it's going to change, and something will need to, I'll need to make a left turn somewhere down the road.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that what you just said could be an entire, and probably should be an entire discussion on its own, because I have definitely felt that weight in the last 6 months or so, pretty heavy about the weekly pace and about the amount of production and the amount of, I don't know the right word for it.
Keep it up.
There's a self-imposed stress and tension that goes with having to create something new. And it, honestly, it kind of limits, anyway, we probably shouldn't get into it right now because we're already pretty far into this one, but I think that is like a valuable topic, because a lot of people do ask about, I mean, all of us, about like, well, how do I do this? Like, how do I become a content creator? And I don't want to scare people away from that, but you have to understand that it gets to a point to where you have to make things. Not that you get to make things. You also get to make things, but not only that. Like, you have to make things. And that can be not something that it sounds better than... I don't know how to... you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It sounds great, but there's a stamina hit to it. But yeah, we should talk about that at length at some time.
All right.
For me, the thing I really took away, and it's the thing I took away last year as well, excuse me, I started working on R2-D2 this past year. It's a huge project, and I made some pretty good progress on it right out of the gate. And I put out the first video on it several months ago, and then I haven't touched it since then. Not because I didn't want to, but because I had a bunch of other stuff to do, and it's honestly such a daunting project. There are so many parts, so many different tasks, and I kind of didn't know what to do next because I was overanalyzing it. Like, well, if I do this part, what if I do it in the wrong order? And then I put all this work down this one path and then realize I have to undo it because I forgot to do this thing, you know, or whatever. And so I just have kind of been paused on the whole thing because I didn't really want to take a wrong step. My time is important to me and it feels very limited. So I didn't want to waste the effort and the cost of doing something that I would have to undo because I did something in the wrong order or did it the wrong way or whatever. Because this is an incredibly expensive project so far. So I went by the robot builders booth, like I always do, because I just want to get motivated and see them. And I saw two people that I've spoken to in the past, and they helped me get started on this thing. They, you know, gave me encouragement and told me kind of the way to start and what I should look for and all the information and stuff. And so I got to talk to both of them a little bit this year, and they both asked how it was going. And I told them where I was stuck and what my worries were. And it was a 10-minute conversation that honestly just opened up a floodgate of just being able to move ahead. Because I basically said, like, I'm worried about doing things in the wrong order or going too far down one path without planning for the future of this project. Like, what, you know, my plan was to build the whole R2-D2 so it looks right, then come back and do all the electronics on the inside so I could kind of separate those two things and not have to worry about it all at the same time, because it's a lot. And so I asked this guy, is that the wrong approach? Like, am I shooting myself in the foot by doing that? And he was like, no, that sounds great. But I mean, other people do it differently, but there's no right or wrong way to do it. And every single one of these that you see, they look the same from the outside, but they're all different. They're made with different stuff. They're made differently on the inside in different orders. And some of them do this and some of them do that. And they're using different parts. And I think it was honestly somebody who has done several of these things that I'm trying to do told me there's no right or wrong way to do it. And I was like, oh, wow. That's like, that took a load off. The thing that dawned on me is that I tell that exact same thing to other people on a daily basis. But it was like, honestly, I had kind of a hang up about it. And so it was, you know, somebody who has the experience gave me the kind of freedom to figure it out as I go along, which is something I feel like I should have already known. But, you know, it was encouragement. And so I came back from Maker Faire with like a, okay, I'm just going to jump into this and I'm going to do it. And if I screw something up, I'll fix it or I'll change it or I'll undo it or whatever, you know? And so that feels really good to come back and have a renewed like momentum for something that's big. And he also pointed out that one of the things about that project specifically is that you look at that thing as a project, but the reality is it's like 200 projects and they all happen to be stuck to the same piece of plastic. You know, it's like each one of the little tasks is a skill set that you have to figure out to do this piece and then this piece. And like, how do you get all these pieces to work together? And that actually helped me too, just to think about, like it's okay to not know every, like the plan for the whole thing, as long as I'm taking one section and I'm learning what I need to do that little piece and then move on. This is also something that I tell people on a regular basis. So I'm not sure why it took another person to remind me of these same things that I say to people. But anyway, I'm glad that it did. It was really encouraging.
I think that's a topic in itself right there, because it's easy to give advice. Even if you're qualified to give advice, it's easy to give other people advice because somebody is asking you a very specific question. And we don't sit down with ourselves to ask ourselves what I need to do here. We just have all these thoughts going through our head. So it takes that other person to just have that conversation, the out loud conversation, and not the internal thoughts going in our head.
That's a really good point. Interesting. And I mean, with that, it kind of feels like, or with the R2-D2 specifically, it kind of feels like a thing that I don't know how to ask other people about. Because like you two have never done that. You don't necessarily have an interest in that specific project, even though you probably would have some of the tasks in it, you know? And I don't have anybody else. There's a huge forum of people that I can ask about it that I don't know. But it's very different. Like when you have a face that you know, somebody who has the experience, and you can ask them specifically like, how do I do this thing? Or what's the best approach here? And I don't really have anybody like that for the R2-D2 project. And that could be part of what's slowed it down in the past. But, you know, that's something I could seek out for sure. I mean, there are people, I just don't know them yet. So.
Yeah. I've been there. I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean when you're in a project and you don't have any reference. Well, it's funny. I had a similar experience in this on a much more rudimentary scale. I have this green pickup truck that I'm fixing up. And I'm just maintaining it. There's not really not much to fix up. It was running horribly. It won't run for more than a few minutes at a time. I said, oh, maybe the fuel's not getting there enough, because it runs and then it shuts off. I'm like, okay, I did what I could to the carburetor. I checked the fuel filter. I changed the fuel pump, and it's still running like garbage. And then Patrick was over the other day, and he was with his cousin who I never met. And they're helping me prep, just because they have not much else to do. They're like, oh, we'll help you prep for the class. And he goes, what can I do? I was like, and he mentioned he was a mechanic. I go, can you get my green truck running? And he asked me three questions. He goes, what about this? What about this? And he goes, well, have you checked the fuel lines? I'm like, no. He goes, how old is the car? I go, 1969. He goes, the fuel lines are probably clogged. He spent 2 hours under the car. He took all the fuel lines out, all the thing. Like, I would be like, no way, I'm not touching those. He took all the fuel lines out of the car, ran wire through all of them, cleaned. And he kept showing me, look at this, look at this, look at this, look what's in here, look what's in here. Clean the fuel lines out. The car runs perfect. So that's something I would have kept changing. I would have probably changed the gas tank before I changed the fuel lines, just because it's not in my wheelhouse to think that could be the problem. So there you go. That's just asking somebody's outside point of view who has a different experience than yours. What could it be? You know, I was never like, I am a lazy auto mechanic. I don't want to change lines and the complicated stuff. I want to get at the stuff I could reach. He's under the car with a flashlight in his teeth, rubber gloves on, laying on rocks. Oh, this only takes 7 screws to get this fuel line out and got to undo these 7 clips. It's nothing. It's nothing. I'm like, oh, all right. In my mind, I would have been like, I see 2 clips in dirt. I'm not going under there. You know? But that was it. That's what it took. You know, that experience to know, oh, that's not as complicated as you think it is. And I was his assistant in surgery.
That's a great line. It's not as complicated as you think it is. Somebody else telling you that is really helpful.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, maybe not in the case of a car, but like this guy telling me that you can't screw it, you can't completely screw it up, was freeing as well. You know, like I can make a mistake. I fix my mistakes constantly. And I don't know why I was that worried about it, but same kind of thing. Somebody saying, like, you're not going to destroy the thing. You may have to rebuild a piece or change something, but it's not the end of the world. I was like, oh, huh.
I always say that, like, and this is a good example for you, Bob. I always say, don't let your projects intimidate you. You know, you are the god in the world of that object. It's not the other way around. Remember that.
Yeah. It's a good point. Any other thoughts on Maker Faire?
No, but you had a topic you wanted to surprise us with. Is that, did we talk about that yet?
We haven't, but it's like we're 50 minutes in and it won't take long. I don't like competition. I don't like, it's not competition in general, in the making world. I'm not a fan of, and I don't, this isn't a statement on anybody else or anything. It's just me. Like, I don't like to take part in build offs or, you know, I got asked to be like a judge in a cosplay competition recently and I turned that down. I just don't like being, I don't like the competition end of it because I think it sends the wrong message. But I do like the fact that it motivates people to do their best, right? That's a good thing. There is good to competition. It's just not my thing. So I made some spoons recently and out of wood. And it was a quick, like, hey, I should try this thing that I've never done. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have the right tools. I'm going to make some spoons. And so I made a couple. I learned some stuff from it. And then my wife came down and I had an extra blank. And I said, hey, you should make this one and we'll make a video about it. Or, you know, and she made hers. And I, as she was making it with the bandsaw, I was like, oh, do this. I forgot to do this. Or I didn't do this the right way. Or this, you know, this will make it better. And, so I was trying to share my, not failure, but the learning that I had done, like in the previous 30 minutes with her as she made hers. And so we got to the end of the video and I said, look at this. This is awesome. Like, hers turned out way better than mine. I didn't think of that as like a, she's wins. Better than me. It was just like, oh, look, like it's better. That's great. You know? And then Jimmy goes and puts out a video about spoon making. And I get this flood of comments tweets about, like, oh, he's coming after you. His is so much better. I'm like, absolutely his is better. But I don't think of that as, like, a competition. I think of that as Jimmy's done this before.
I've made, like, 10 spoons.
Jimmy has done this. Exactly. He's done this many times. He's a bandsaw master. Like, of course his is better. It should be better. And I should learn from it. Like, I don't see that as a competition. The thing that I don't like is, and this is not a complaint, but it just made me think about, like, it's really weird how people look at us as competitors. Not you and I necessarily, but like all of the people who are creating content, like somebody does something first and then the next person is copying them. Not necessarily. Like maybe they both like to make the same thing or they're learning from each other. Anyway, it just dawned on me from this kind of, you get comments from different directions for different reasons, right? And a lot of people are goofing around and they're joking about, like, oh, Jimmy's coming after you making a better spoon. Of course he is. But some of them legitimately think that there's like a, oh, yeah, he's going to show you how it's really done. And I'm like,
well, it's funny. It's
Jimmy's intention, you know?
I had the same experience because I guess April and Anne of All Trades made spoons recently.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so I put a picture of my spoon up last night on Instagram, right? I guess, you know, before we went to had dinner here at the house, and somebody's like, oh, you made a spoon because Anne of All Trades made a spoon. I'm like, no, this is like the 15th spoon I made and the third video I've made on spoons in the last 8 years. So I gently said, I go, oh, you know, if you go look at Make Magazine's channel, the second highest rated video is me making a spoon. It's got like 10 million views. I wish I could have that video on my channel, but it's not. It's on the Make channel. It's a spoon I made years ago. But I know you put a spoon video out because Jenny and I talked about it and you mentioned it, you know, behind the scenes in our travels. And someone said, oh, Bob's spoon is out. And I immediately said, oh, that gives me a good cause to maybe I was in the middle of making a spoon. Someone goes, oh, Bob's spoon video is out. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I'll make a video too. And so I started filming me making that thing. So Bob, you inspired me to make the video and put it out because you just did the timing with yours. And the first thought in my mind was not who's going to make the better spoon, was I can't wait to see who other makers make a spoon. And now absolutely is going to happen because we're talking about it. But just like a couple years ago when I mowed the lawn, Matthias mowed his lawn, then I mowed my lawn, and then Steve mowed his lawn, and then Dave mowed his lawn. That was just like a funny little like swell, groundswell. So you made the spoon in this arena, and so then I just happened to be having a spoon making class. So I made a video of a spoon, and then now everybody's going to make spoons, and I can't wait to see somebody who's going to make like an 8-foot tall spoon with, like, you know, Jackman's going to make a spoon that you could like mix the
you could row a boat with.
For the record, I made the best lawn mowing video in that competition.
As I recall, it was like just a little.
I think just the thing that really, you know, this didn't upset me or anything, but the thing it brought to my attention is from the outside, I think a lot of people look at video creation and even, you know, people making similar things as some sort of a competition. But I think internally, at least within the YouTube community, I don't see that. I see a lot of like, I saw this thing that inspired me to try something I've never tried before, which is totally the point of all this, right? Or I learned this little piece from Jimmy's video, so I want to do it in mine. And you know, I think we're all doing that. I just wish that the viewership really understood that that was the intention and not like people trying to outdo each other, because I think that's really counter to the spirit of the maker community. And I think it's more about like iteration, you know, taking something you learn from somebody else and building it into your skill set and making a new thing with it. And this but part of this was from Jenny and I were walking around Maker Faire, and I was saying that like, it's been a really long time since I've made just a prop for the sake of making a prop. I love doing that, and it's hard for me to justify those because they don't do as well on my channel, and they take a long time and stuff, but I really want to. And we were walking around, and we saw this little booth of, there were these space helmets, and there were kids popping up in these space helmets taking pictures, right? And Jenny looked over, and she was like, you should make a space helmet. And my first thought, and this is my internal whatever, my first thought was, well, I can't do that. Adam Savage has like the market cornered on spacesuits. And if I do anything regarding a spacesuit, everybody will just go, oh, you're copying Adam again, because I get that constantly for a lot of things that I do. And that says nothing about Adam Savage. That says everything about people seeing something in one place and thinking that's where it started, right? And then anybody that also does that thing, they see as a copy. That's just the wrong way to look at it. But the thing that bothered me about it was that I internalized that. And Jenny said, make a spacesuit. And I said, no, I can't because blah, 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 whatever the reason is. And that bugged me. And so I'm trying to get myself more in the place of like, I need to embrace the fact that it's iteration and maybe call it out if I need to, you know, just to calm people down. But like, I don't want that type of external conversation to dictate what I do and don't make. You know, does that make sense? Like that, I caught myself doing that. And I was like, ooh, that's not good. Like now I don't want to not make another spoon so that people don't go like, oh, now you're just trying to outdo Jimmy's spoon that he was doing to outdo yours. Like, I don't want to like buy into that thing because I really do think that's all counter to what the community is really about.
As far as I know, there's none of us within our circle and our community who, there's no feuds. There's, everybody loves each other. When we go to these events, it's all about like hanging out with these other creators, getting tips and sharing what we know. Everybody in this community, no matter how big or small, shares what works with them and shares their numbers and shares this and that and their contacts with these sponsorships and other companies. And
yeah,
This is the community that it grows together, and it's not like, you know, there's other YouTube communities, and I would imagine like the prank channels, like they're all trying to outdo each other. We are not trying to outdo each other.
Yeah,
that's true. That's a good way to put it. Anyway, I just wanted to voice that because the spoon thing was a good pertinent way for me to, you know, like bring it up, because like otherwise it'd just be me complaining about not getting to make a space helmet.
Wait till you see the golf the golf hole that I make. It's gonna blow yours out of the water.
Oh, you said one time that you were going to make an R2-D2 inspired thing. Did that ever happen, or did you still
No, but I actually just drew it again in my iPad while I was traveling. I'm like, I have to make this.
Good. And it's good. I want to see what it is.
It's one of my 50 ideas I dumped while I was traveling that I actually have to make.
Awesome.
I think I'm going to start a YouTube channel.
Nah, it'll never take off. All right. What have you guys been watching? Anything new? Oh, wait. Before you do that, I need to thank our Patreon supporters because we have a new supporter. All of our Patreon supporters, thank you for making this show possible. And we got to meet a lot of you guys at Maker Faire, and that was fantastic. So thank you for coming out. Big thanks to our top supporters. Excuse me, my throat. Evan and Caitlin, Corey Ward, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Maker in Training, Funkiss Artistic Creations, Blondie Hacks, Caleb Harris, our new patron, Modern DIY, and Make Build Modify. They're our top supporters, but we're grateful for every single one of you at any level. And if you support us at any level, you also get the after show, which is more of us talking, sometimes secret things, sometimes upcoming things, sometimes not. But there's more of whatever we do. So go to patreon.com/makingit. And help us out, or don't. That's cool.
Thank you.
Either way. David, what you got?
First, I want to thank the handful of people that came up to me and said, do more art projects and do more of the creative stuff. Because I've had the conversations lately of, like, anytime I do the playful artsy videos, they get half the views. And there was lots of encouragement from people coming up and said, please do more of that. So thank you. So my pick of the week is I don't have a good video, so I'm going with Kencraft. It's their local hardwood dealer here in Toledo. They're really good friends of mine, and they've supported me for the past maybe 2 or 3 years, and they are a sponsor, and in that I get wood from them for the projects. And I am doing a meetup there on June 8th. So if you're in the Toledo area, please come and hang out. I'll be doing book signings, and there'll be some other people there doing demonstrations. I think Craig's going to be there. And I'm sorry I'm turning this into a promotional thing, but this is what I have going on. And Craig, they're going to do some demonstrations. And then one of the Routerbit companies is going to be there. And Chad Stanton, another local creator, is going to be doing demonstrations. So if you're in the Toledo area, come hang out with me at Kencraft on June 8th. And that's what I have. That's my pick. They do sell online. So if you're looking, lots of people say, I don't have a hardwood dealer near me. They do sell online. Of course, shipping is always difficult when you deal with heavy woods. But if you're looking for something special, they're the ones. It's a family-owned business. It's been everybody that works there, there's 6 people that work there. They're all part of the family. And just super sweet people. They treat me right. And
Jimmy, you are muted.
Just want to give them some love.
I wanted to say, check out the hashtag Obey the Grain. That's the, you'll see a lot of the work from this weekend. You go check out Bastion Head. That's Tracy. He's the teacher. Bastion Head is the Instagram for Katrina and Tracy. And they're the amazing, talented teachers. And they've been going around also to all the woodworker shows. So if anybody's been at the wood show, Tracy and Katrina are the couple that do the power carving demos at all the East Coast woodworking shows. If anybody who's been to those shows, that's who teaches our class. And they're an amazing couple and amazing teachers. And their hashtag is Obey the Grain. You'll see all the students and the people.
That's cool. Turns out you can link to a hashtag on Instagram through a web address. That's neat. Just learned something new. Yeah, that's linked in the show notes. And if you ever want the show notes for these, they're on makingitpodcast.com. They also should be in the, you know, notes field of your podcast app. But I don't know if the links work from that. But anyway, they're all at makingitpodcast.com. I also put a link to Prosthesis, which is the name of that crab robot thingy. And
lobster cage, the walking lobster cage.
I have a link. The walking lobster cage. Anyway, yeah, that'll be there. So mine is Sophie Wong. And I think I've talked about Sophie before. met Sophie last year at Maker Faire briefly. She's super cool. And she makes some pretty amazing wearable electronics. She's been working on this space helmet. And I can't, there's a couple reasons I wanted to bring this up. But one is because she made a space helmet pretty much just like from her mind. Like she just made it up. It's not like from a prop, from a specific movie or anything like that. And she kind of figured it out as she went along and added a bunch of detail. And it's beautiful. It's just, it's awesome. And she ended up, she wanted to make the helmet and then ended up making the whole suit pretty much, like a bunch of like a chest plate and all this stuff. And it's all like foam and, you know, paint. It's nothing super elaborate, but it looks fantastic. And she, I didn't get to see her at the fair this year. We just kept missing each other. She had it with her. I was really hoping to see it up close, but luckily she did a video on Tested about it. I guess right after the fair, right before the fair. And they have a lot of close-ups of it. She talks about how she made it and everything. And she has her own channel, but it's very small. But I want to encourage her to make more videos about the things that she makes because they're beautiful. And they're sci-fi, so that's awesome. That's just like my thing. So that I wanted to encourage her here to make more videos. But I also wanted to kind of encourage myself to see somebody who made a space helmet out of their brain and didn't have anything to do with anybody else. You know, she just made a thing that she wanted to have. I just want to get that again, right? Where I want to make something like that for myself and not worry about who else has done it or if, you know, it's going to be compared to somebody else's project or any of that stuff. So good for you, Sophie. Sorry I didn't get to see you this year, but everybody go check her out.
So Bob, I just had a thought when you were talking about the spacesuit. Now, I don't know, just like what Sophie did, she made one up that doesn't necessarily correlate to any existing science fiction drama, but I thought for you to make a spacesuit, if it's something you did want to do, cross-reference two things, like a spacesuit to live in the woods or a spacesuit to be on this planet or a spacesuit to be on that other, right. You know, something so you have like a constrained set of parameters that you need to live within. Mm. You know, like I saw George Lucas once say, and it's obvious, but it was interesting to hear him say it, you know, you make a set of rules and laws for this new environment you create and you have to stick to it. The minute you go outside mm-hmm. of that, those rules and regulations you create for this new imaginary world, people start to fall off of the train car and being like, oh, I'm not really interested in this. But yeah. But I'm saying if you create a set of rules for an existing set of circumstances that you need to make a spacesuit for, it would challenge you to do things in a new way as opposed to just figuring out, like I see Adam a lot of times trying to make something that looks exactly like something Stanley Kubrick did. As opposed to trying to make something that he invents for, you know, when he's doing his cosplay stuff, not necessarily. You know, obviously, Adam's extremely talented as an inventor and a maker. But I notice a lot of the problem solving is how can I make something look exactly like something that already exists as opposed to let me invent something for something new. And but in the cosplay environment. So that's all. Just a little.
I had a conversation with Bill Duran about that, but let's talk about it in the after show.
Got it.
Ooh, cool.
Good.
All right.
Awesome. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you. I love you and I love feedback. Sorry, my headset died and I had it, you know, just it's back now. Love you.
Okay.